a total passion for the product. I just love creating beautiful things. So I want to cocoon, empower, elevate, flatter my woman.
This is True Tales of Luxury with me, Mariella Frostrup. In this series of podcasts for Harrods, I'm talking to people at the top of the creative industries about their work and their relationship with luxury. Today, I'm here with the fashion designer Amanda Wakely. Her wonderful clothes, all clean lines and luxurious fabrics, have kept her on the top of her profession for more than 30 years and been worn by everyone from Princess Diana to ordinary working women going about their daily lives. In 2010, she was awarded an OBE for her services to British fashion. Hello, 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 Amanda. How lovely to see you.
How are you?
Vision you are. You look absolutely gorgeous, of course.
As do you.
Not at all, in my slightly sagging velvets.
You look gorgeous.
In a vision of berry-coloured suede and cashmere, you just don't disappoint, do you?
Well, bless you for that.
You have said in the past that you don't consider your clothes high fashion as such, that they fall into the remit of style. And I just wondered how you differentiate between the two, but where would your boundaries be?
For me, that means timeless chic rather than working into trends and things that are going to date very quickly. I want my women to look effortlessly chic and have clothes with longevity, but that feel very relevant for now. I want to do is I want to dress the woman rather than the woman be dressed by the trend.
Well, you're already doing something marvellous, which is you're calling your clients women rather than girls. You've been working in the fashion industry
for too long.
For over two decades. I think it's probably changed quite a lot in the period of time that you've been involved in it.
Seismically. And, you know, I launched in 1990. Yes, the internet was there, but oh my God, we didn't have websites and social media or any of that way of communicating that we do now. So one of the most important people in our business is our head of digital. Well, that's a new role over the last two decades.
And what about fashion itself? In that time, there has been a shift, or has there? You know, there's a perceptual shift, you know, into kind of people wearing much more casual clothes and so on. But has that actually happened? Or is that just a kind of teenage thing?
No, I think it really has happened. I think we're probably similar ages, and we're probably, I know I am, I think you are too, we're probably dressing younger now than we were 20 years ago. The whole sports luxe thing is not a trend. It's here to stay.
And when did you first, you know, I mean, you were quite a young girl when you started running things up on the sewing machine and
absolutely.
I think making a bit of spare cash at Cheltenham Ladies College from running up things for other people. Where did these dressmaking skills come from? And what was it about clothes that you remember first exciting you?
Well, that's the joke in the family, is that where did I get my sewing skills from? And we've decided it must have been my father, the surgeon, who's sewing up people. And I think it's just completely innate. I was lucky enough to have an amazing dressing up box as a child that my mother and my grandmothers just threw their cast-offs into, and they were very tolerant about me ripping up beautiful saris from Ceylon, as it was then known, and making a trouser suit, or just generally customizing things that were in the dressing up box. So honestly, I was really little, but I very early on I realized the power of feeling good in what you were wearing. It's immensely empowering. Likewise, it's a horrible feeling. It's a bit like a bad hair day, feeling ill at ease in your clothes.
Well, that you've got the wrong things on.
Yes, you know. Exactly. I remember talking to actually a great friend of mine who said, it can ruin my day if I don't feel right in my clothes. And I think it can for many of us.
I see it a lot with my teenage daughter now, and it reminds me of when I was a teenager and how, you know, they think they're so unique and outrageous and, you know, rebellious. But actually, I think they're much more conformist as teenagers. You know, they all want to be wearing the same things, as it were. Did you fall into that category, or were you radical in terms of your style?
I was very, very particular. I knew exactly what I wanted. In those days, I was going around secondhand shops. They would now be called vintage shops, and you'd be paying five times what I was paying for an old, you know, men's coat or an old blazer that I would then customize or take a pattern off or change. Early on, I created my own style rather than wanting to conform.
And what was your teenage style?
Oh, my God, remember, it was back in the 70s, so...
I had hideous faded jeans that I sewed flower-patterned Laura Ashley fabric into triangles to make
yes.
the flare cover my hideous wedge shoes.
And my favourite look was a pair of see-through vinyl Fiorucci jeans, which I had to wear over probably some revolting leggings. They were baking hot to wear, but I thought they were the coolest things imaginable.
And when did it become apparent to you that this was something that you might pursue as a career rather than just, you know, something that you were obsessive about and loved?
Not until I moved back to the UK, having spent 4 years in the States. I moved back right at the end of the 80s, and I'd been lucky enough to work in the fashion industry in and around it during my time in the States.
You were in your early 20s when you were in America, yeah?
Yes, very early 20s. Came back and I realised that I couldn't find the clothes here that I'd sort of learnt to love in the States, and that sort of understated, easy sports luxury. And then I was sort of getting stopped in when I went into Browns, and someone would ask me where I got my black suede duster coat from, which of course I'd made myself. And I just thought, do you know what? There must be a gap in the market here for that very easy, understated, yet luxurious approach to dressing. So I designed a tiny collection, primarily for me, but for friends and friends of friends. And it sort of took off from there.
How much do you think the fact that you were able to make clothes? Very many designers don't know how to make clothes. They know how to design something,
yeah.
but not actually. How does that influence what you create?
I still love that fact. I still love the problem solving of being in a fitting and trying to overcome the construction problem of how do you make something work beautifully, effortlessly is a word that we use all the time in the design studio. If we can't make it look effortless, it's out. At times, that actual hands-on, that rolling of chiffon, that struggle of making velvet beautifully, which is a really difficult thing to make. I just loved the actual crafting.
That is, in a way, the other difference between sort of high fashion and luxury and style is the effortlessness. There's a lot of high fashion that you have to put an awful lot of effort into in order to wear, and probably experience quite a lot of discomfort. And it seems to me that it is something that I still associate a lot with American designers is, yeah, comfort, but without sacrificing style for it.
I mean, fit and comfort is fundamental to me. I'm a woman designing for women. Why should we be corseted and cinched? And yes, I want to look taller and skinnier and sexier, yes. But that's sort of a given. And if I do my job well, I make you feel all of those things.
What would you say your biggest break was when fortune just smiled at you?
I think one of my earliest lucky moments was being introduced to the late Princess of Wales by the sadly now late Anna Harvey, who was the deputy editor of Vogue at the time, and she was advising Diana on what to wear. And she said to me, you two should meet, you'd get on well, and I think your style would be amazing for her. It was early days in my business, and I had a tiny, tiny studio. It was literally a two-bedroom flat, but it had its own front door, so it looked like it could be the whole house. And I remember thinking, oh, 2:55, the doorbell rang, and I thought, oh, great, it'll be the sniffer dogs and then I can brush my hair and do the final tidy up. Oh no, it was Diana standing on one leg on the doorstep, literally with a finger in her mouth saying, I'm really sorry I'm early. And we had a laugh and I said, I'm really sorry I haven't brushed my hair. We had a laugh and we got on immensely well right from the start. But her patronage was very important. That put me on the map in a way that probably a Kim Kardashian wearing a designer now, for example, has that effect.
Two very different women.
Two very different women. You're right. How the world has changed.
You've dressed some amazing women over the years, from Diana, Princess of Wales, to Angelina Jolie, to Scarlett Johansson, to you probably could roll them off your tongue faster than me. But is there someone who sort of sums up or epitomizes the kind of effortless, luxurious style that you create?
Actually, yes, there are many women that do, whether it's Katharine Hepburn, you know, Faye Dunaway, there's Lauren Hutton, which all sounds so cliched, but actually, for me, seeing a woman come out of a changing room clearly feeling elevated and walking a little bit taller and with her shoulders back and just with a bit of sass, knowing that what she's put on makes her feel great, really, really makes me feel great.
What do you like designing the most? I mean, you know, at one point you were very much associated with the fabulous evening gown. I've been lucky enough to wear a couple of your dresses. They just transform you as the wearer. You suddenly become this kind of creature that you never thought you could be. You do feel
elevated. Can I quote you on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I wonder if that's where your passion lies or whether it's changed over the years as well. I mean, you know, my style has completely changed over the years, I think.
I still love the romanticism of dresses, but I have to say I love the whole sports luxe. How I live, we live, you live. You want to feel youthful, a little bit cool, but not try too hard, and striking that balance. You know, we're not kids. We're not going to wear urban streetwear, but we do still want to
Some
feel...
of us try occasionally. Not saying it goes very well.
But we do still want to feel cool, but without trying too hard. I love putting that specifically into the cashmere. The cashmere collection has evolved hugely over the last few years, and I'm really loving that element.
I know that you love traveling. Do you go and source things yourself?
To a degree, but in this world now, so much comes to you. I still love biannual trips to the big fabric fair, and that's a very immersive, creative 3 days that we spend together as a design team. And just, is that glamorous travel? God, no. It's put your sneakers on and you are going to be in 5 giant exhibition halls for 3 days of your life. But I do travel a lot and you never switch off. Your eyes are always processing visual information, whether it's national costume or a kid on the street or pottery or art or photography or whatever it is. You're constantly processing that information. You're sort of filtering it.
And you've managed, despite some major ups and downs, maybe we can talk about for a moment, but to maintain your kind of enthusiasm. And so what is it that drives you? Why do you continue to love to design?
A total passion for the product. I just love creating beautiful things. So I want to cocoon, empower, elevate, flatter my woman so that she can get on with her whatever she's doing, whether it's the school run or a major board meeting or travelling to the other end of the earth.
About a decade ago, I think, the company was sort of sold from under your feet.
Yes.
Literally from one day to the next.
Yep.
You didn't even know it had happened.
Well, it goes back a long way, but I had a backer. I had a situation whereby he sold the business to a restructuring specialist. And so then you just step away and regroup.
So he literally sold it without telling you?
Yes.
And you found out how?
I was told the evening after he had signed the documents. The whole thing was really not good, but I stepped away from it, regrouped, and had the opportunity to buy the brand back.
But you must be, I know you had good support at the time and everything, but you must be incredibly resilient. You must have something, a core that's pretty strong to get through something like that in your life and not to let it defeat you and stepping out into that arena again.
I guess so, but I always think whatever doesn't get you makes you stronger, and you just get on with it. I mean, that's how I was brought up. You know, you pick yourself up from the playground and you dust yourself off and you get back on the pony, or you just get on. I'm never one to sit around and lick my wounds. I think you need to take stock, don't get me wrong, but you are who you make yourself.
That's a pretty extraordinary thing to do. I mean, you lost everything night. I don't want to overstress
No,
it.
But I felt very violated. I was actually in shock. I think, honestly, I was lucky enough to just leave the country with my dog, as we were, and just stand back from it and think, okay, I've done this for 18 years. Is this time to do something else? And I remember I was taking a swim, and it was late at night, and it was sort of, I think it was early January, and I just thought, do you know what? There's so much that I still want to do. I was lucky enough to have Hugh's backing.
He's your partner.
My partner. And we had the opportunity to buy the brand back and then buy the business back and really take it to the next level of okay, what do we want this to be? How do we make it investable? And that's exactly what we did.
And do you think you approached it differently the second time around? Because initially, I know you were partners with your second husband, and that when you split up, that was partly when things started going slightly wrong with the business. Do you think that over the years, you've changed how you operate as a businesswoman?
Definitely. You grow up, you grow, you hopefully learn from mistakes.
I mean, lots of people wouldn't have gone from having a partnership with their husband, which didn't go very well,
to a partnership with your partner. Very, very different men. In fact, 180 degrees. And also, when we bought the business back, Hugh said to me, we're only doing this if you really, really understand what's going on here. And, you know, previously I'd been in a situation where I had a business partner who said to me, don't you worry about running the business. And, you know, to a creative, that's sort of music to your ears. Then you learn the hard way. I've learned a lot from that. And I think, you know, when you stop learning, you stop growing, then life becomes very shallow.
This is True Tales of Luxury with me, Mariella Frostrup. Success has come very slowly for you. You know, you've become a global brand in maturity. Do you think that there's a difference to how that feels and what you want to do with it, with that success? I mean, you've won countless fashion awards now, and you're very much seen as an ambassador for British style and British design.
That's very generous of you. Thank you. I feel quite lucky that I've evolved rather than had that crazy trajectory that a lot of these sort of younger kids have. And the pressure in the industry is immense. Unlike when I started the business, now it's numerous collections or drops a year, and you're constantly juggling. And actually to have a bit of maturity to try and get that balance is really helpful.
I wondered how you felt having gone through the turmoil in your business life that you had, when you were awarded the OBE, it must have felt like an amazing... How did you decide what to wear?
Oh, I mean, it was very funny, the actual getting the letter, because a brown envelope arrived at the business and it was just before Christmas. And our accountant gave it to me and I thought, oh, God, here we go. It's a tax demand, which I, you know...
Really don't need.
And I sort of tore it open. And I sort of couldn't believe what I was reading because I had no idea anyone had put me forward. That was a delight. And then, yes, deciding what to wear. And I wanted to look glamorous because my mother and father were coming up to London to join me and Hugh for the day. And my father always loved me looking glamorous. So that was important to me. And we celebrated afterwards, which was really special. And I could wear my OBE because you can't wear them other than on the day of the ceremony.
And did you go to bed very late that night?
Very late, wearing it.
You mentioned that your father always loved you looking glamorous. Do you think that he influenced you in your career choice?
Yes. Well, not directly, but I've got many, many happy childhood memories of he would love to come fabric shopping with me. And he was really, really indulgent in a way because he loved colour and he loved beautiful things. There was a gorgeous fabric shop in Chester and he would come with me and he was so patient as I, you know, got them to unroll this roll of silk or that roll of silk and decide how many sort of inches it was at the time rather than centimetres that I needed to make this pair of trousers or that top so that I didn't waste a centimetre of it because it was so expensive. So in that way, he really encouraged my dressmaking.
So what makes your clothes luxurious? What are the elements to them that you think defines them as luxury?
Well, it's interesting, that one, because for me, the inside has to be as gorgeous as the outside because the inside is what's against you, the wearer, and that's key. So I love to line the jackets in particular in silk because if you know what it's like, you have a camisole on, you put your arm into the sleeve of a silk lined jacket, nothing feels better. I always put a beautiful little AW monogram embroidery inside the jacket too. And so that's just little simple things. An evening dress, you know, really thinking about how supple the corsetry can be. How can we support and flatter the body without it being uncomfortable and restricting. How something feels. I love things that feel gorgeous, whether it's cashmere or silk or a beautiful fine wool or a nappa leather or a suede. I've always loved things that are good to touch.
Who have you had the most fun dressing, I suppose, or been most delighted with how they looked, how they carried it?
Oh, gosh, there are many. We never talk about who we dress and how we dress them and
But
all
there are
that.
People who we've seen wearing yes. your clothes. I mean, you know, yep. from Diana to Angelina Jolie to Theresa May.
Yes.
So there must be highlights, and I'm not even asking you about the lowlights, but there must be highlights. I promise I won't ask you about the lowlights if you tell me about the highlights. But, you know, in the same way as a playwright sees a particular actress step onto a stage and recite his or her lines, there must be someone that really excites them to see that happen. And you know, there must be an equivalent in the world of design
of course.
And in fashion.
And I suppose when Meghan Markle, now Duchess of Sussex, stepped out for her first public engagement with the Queen, that was great. That was a wonderful moment because it was a surprise. None of us knew that she would be wearing Wakeley. Angelina Jolie on the red carpet had no idea that that was going to happen. You know, when Diana resigned from public life wearing Wakeley, and then when she was talking about, you're probably expecting me to have my head down the loo, you know, when she was talking about her bulimia very openly to the press. So I suppose Theresa May getting up there to take office, curtsying to the Queen. Yes, that's lovely. It's not all about dressing red carpet actresses. It's actually about dressing real powerful women.
That's interesting, because that's one of the things I wanted to ask you also, which is that, you know, women have changed a lot in the decades since you started designing, and the thing about that you mentioned earlier about us wearing more comfortable clothes and things now has come from the fact that we're doing an awful lot more now. How much has that influenced what you think of as great clothes for women?
A lot, because I'll never forget one of my big city clients saying to me, whenever I've got a tricky day ahead, I reach for Wakely. And I thought, ka-ching, that really made my year, because that's why I do what I do. But it isn't just about power suits for the city. It's, you know, making you feel super fabulous on the school run. You know, why not? Great cashmere sweater over your yoga kit. If that makes you feel great, fabulous.
I know you dress women of all ages. There is a challenge as you get older to finding your style, working out what suits you and what perhaps you won't wear anymore and what you will. Do you have any rules of your own? I mean, I can't wear a short skirt anymore. I feel ridiculous. That's not to say that I judge other people as being ridiculous wearing them. It's just in myself. That is, you know, I can't do that.
It's interesting. I started, you're going to laugh at this, I started writing the outline for a book and I was calling it Finding Your Style DNA or Discovering Your Style DNA. And I think there's a lot to be said for working out who you are sartorially and evolving that. And how do you do that? You know, is it a cheeky selfie in the changing room and then looking at it in the cold light of day later?
Oh, that's tough.
No, but it's really good too.
As long as it's not underwear that you're trying on.
No.
That definitely doesn't bear scrutinizing.
But it's, I think there's something very useful about the third eye, as it were. If ever I'm making complicated design decisions in the design room, I'll always do it in the mirror. I need that sort of objectivity. It is only clothing. It should be uplifting. It should make you smile. It should make you feel great. And if it makes you feel great, then wear it. So I'm not a big fan of rules, is what I'm saying. I'm a big fan of what makes you feel great. Be yourself is my big thing.
I know we've asked you to tell us about your luxury item. What would that be?
Well, I'm wearing it. We're laughing about it. It's a beautiful heavy gauge cashmere sweater. For me, that, you know, it has such longevity. It has such luxury. I've always loved cashmere. I've always loved things that feel delicious. And I was in the country a year ago, and I was doing my Saturday morning ritual of throwing on my old clothes to get on my mountain bike to go for a long cycle ride, and my favourite cashmere sweater had been decimated by moths.
Oh, I hate moths.
And then I got on my bike and I was furious. I was just sort of...
In mourning.
Violated.
Yeah.
And then I thought, do you know what? You've got to turn negatives into positives. And then I started to come up with this idea that wouldn't it be fun to create this beautiful embroidered, embellished moth that you applied and over your moth holes. And so you were elevating, you know, your moth-ridden sweater rather than relegating it.
That's a genius idea. Have you done it? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Yes.
So they're covered in moths.
On Amanda's sleeve, she's wearing a berry-coloured, gorgeously rich, russet red sweater with a black stripe down the sleeves and two black stripes at the shoulders that run down the sides, embellished with a couple of magnificent, though much loathed by me, moths.
Yes, but so for me it was adding some humour, adding another layer of luxury to something that would have previously been relegated, which just feels very wrong in this day and age of overconsumption and, you know, throwaway society that we live in. And no, this wasn't decimated, this particular sweater.
You can see I was just bursting to ask, is that the sweater that was decimated?
No. But then we took it to another level and we created this beautiful actual intarsia moth into cashmere, because cashmere has become such an important product category for us as a business. And I just love the longevity of a beautifully designed cashmere piece.
So will you sell the moths separately for people like me with
Absolutely.
Beautiful sweaters, you know, covered in moth holes?
Yes, absolutely. And we will apply, the cost of the moth includes the application. So I don't care whether you bring in your H&M jeans and we apply a moth to your bottom. So it's adding humour and making something bespoke and unique, that in this world of everything has to have your initials on it or be bespoke or customised or whatever. I think whenever you, and the moths really felt, you know, they're really beautiful. They're hand-embroidered, hand-beaded. They're all quite different. You know, there's never two that are identical. And I love the charm and the artistry that's gone into that. And it makes you think about the person that's actually embroidered that.
Do you think there might be a return? You know, we're now sort of reacting against the whole idea of sort of fashion, fast food, and things being made for very cheap that fall apart 2 weeks later and contribute to the kind of excess of goods that are not recycled. And do you think that there's a chance that what you do will actually become the norm, in that everyone will want things that last a long time, that mean something to them?
I would love to think so. I find it disturbing to hear of certain generations who wouldn't even consider wearing something twice because it's been seen on Instagram, for example. That just feels so fundamentally wrong.
And just finally, if I let you run rampant through Harrods, what would you scoop up on your way if you could take anything out of here?
Oh my God, Harrods is a luxury superstore. It's unbelievable.
It's like a house of fantasies.
It is. I'd want a time extension for my trolley dash. Oh, where would I start? I don't know.
Where would you start?
The fine jewellery department is exquisite. I think what's lovely is to be able to see so much variety that's been beautifully curated, whether it's the food halls or the fine jewellery or the fashion or the sportswear too.
That's one of my favourite things, looking at sportswear.
Dreaming about not doing yoga in it.
That's not doing the activity, just looking at what one could potentially wear whilst doing it. Thank you very much, Amanda Wakely.
My pleasure.
This has been True Tales of Luxury, recorded in Harrods in London with me, Mariella Frostrup, and my guest, Amanda Wakely. Goodbye.